Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com and worldwide, including the Armed Forces Radio Network.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And that's fantastic.
From coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boys Lip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Pelo de Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Larrabee's and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vibach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWineMaker.com.
Dunkle.biz.
I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Delvoir Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you.
There he is.
Chili.
The one in the... It is? Oh, yeah, 57 already. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's chilly out
That's
there tonight.
That's what all that rain was for. Ooh, that's impressive.
That's right. Yeah.
For this time of night to be in the 50s? Wow.
It's okay. It's cold.
Yeah.
I say chilly.
I know.
Yeah, I'm talking to the rest of the country. It's bloody cold down here now. Yeah.
So. Yeah, this is, yeah, definitely. I forgot to mention this during when we were talking before the show started, but I don't know if you get the TBT or saw it, but they had a section in the back on it was a brief thing on they do like a wine of the week or something on there,
right?
And
yeah.
they mentioned wine related apps, and being that it's a local newspaper, I don't know if they got that from certain resources that like a show that we did last week, or if they got it from Joy's Joy of Wine blog. But they mentioned four of the wine apps that you talked about last week. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, they talked about four of them, and I thought, I wonder where if they got that from her blog or if they got it from, you know, who knows if they're listening. But that was pretty cool. Yeah, it's the TBT.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, it's the Tampa Bay Times. It's a really good condensed version of the full-fledged newspaper, and it's got some good stuff in it. But anyway, I saw that, and
too.
I thought,
it
is. Yeah, that's really cool, too. So you get good news stories and everything else, plus the information on wine every once in a while. And yeah, it was a good section. So
I didn't see that. I'm never around where the TBT is, and so you're down there and can pick it up and see it. That's cool. I never knew that.
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah.
I was listening to that opening there, and we have talked to really, really a lot of cool people around this country. You know, it's just been fantastic. I every time I hear that opening, I smile because of all the neat people we have talked to.
Yeah.
So,
and there's a lot more that I couldn't fit in the 2 minutes, almost 3 minutes intro. But, yeah, there's a lot more out there that, you know, I don't know, it's about time to update it, I guess, because we have more guests and more guests, and those are ones from way back there. So, yeah, it's really cool.
Almost fill a show just with the people we've talked to, just introducing each one individually. You know,
If we did little clips of each one of them, there's the show.
There's the show. Thanks for tuning in. And if you if you missed them, everything's available on archives, so you're really not missing anything. There's everything you can go back and listen to. So that's what's so cool about it too. So fantastic.
Yeah, all the time. Anytime you want to listen to it, there you go. And today, we have another interesting topic, so here we go. Hang on a second. Let's see if that's it.
Ah.
Yeah, okay. Got that. That was a wine bottle, and you know what's interesting is what goes into that wine bottle.
That's right. That's what's going to be our main topic tonight, too, additives. And that's the thought occurred to me this past week. I was thinking, okay, let's get Texan guests on. But then I'm thinking, you know, there are so many things that go into wines. And I look at the wines I'm making and I add a little bit of this or a little bit of that. And I'm thinking, people don't realize what goes into a wine. They fermentation and you know that, you know, you bottle it and it ages in oak and it tastes good. But How's it get there? I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. That was just a little tease here. There's a few little topics I'm going to talk about before that, though. Just little catch-up things. Finger Lakes International Wine Competition is coming up. I received my invite like I do every year. The entry guide for 2014 is now out, so if you want to enter it, you may do so. It is called Camp Good Days and Special Times. That is the theme for it this time. They've got all sorts of entries. I won't go through all the different categories, but they've got dozens and dozens of categories. The actual judging will take place on March the 29th and March 30th, which the wines must be shipped by the 7th and arrive no later by the 10th of March. So you're getting in crunch time here. So if you're going to enter, you need to do it within the next week since today is the 27th. So you've got 10 days to get it shipped. So if you're making it now, too late. The judges, they showed a list of the world-renowned judges. Competition management is Americans, but the international wine judges slated to take part of it. We've got California, Hungary, New York, Spain, Canada, Greece, Israel, Bulgaria, Sweden, Italy, Czech Republic, Hungary, North Carolina, Czech Republic again, France, Slovenia, Pennsylvania, Israel again here, New Jersey, Argentina, United Kingdom. These are all the different places, plus there's lots of them I didn't read there. I skipped over it. There's duplicates, but a lot of international judges are going to be at this contest. It is, if you're going to enter it, you need to ship 4 bottles of the 750 milliliter or 4 bottles of the 375 milliliter along with your entry fee of, and I will tell you that in a second if you're interested. I think it's 30. I don't know. I skipped over that. I know it's here. Where is it? $50 per entry. So $50 per entry in 4 bottles. Ship it by the 7th. Send it in. You can also attend the dinner and auction, which will be held Saturday, January 3rd. It's only $150 a person for the dinner and auction to reserve your table. Of 10 or more. So, cool. They help promote them. If you win any of the awards, they help promote you and best of shows and stuff like that. So, I just wanted to share that. That is the Finger Lakes International Wine Competition. It benefits Camp Good Days in the New York area. Camp Good Days and Special Times. So, It's a great cause every year. A lot of these wine competitions, they don't just take the money and put it in their pocket. It all goes for good causes. And, you know, you gotta like that stuff because of that. Last week, I gave you some real estate. Haven't heard back from the guy yet. I will try to get in touch with him again. But I noticed another one here that I don't think I said. 86 acres in just southwest of Walla Walla, Washington. Irrigated. And it's got the permits and all that, only $850,000. So what a deal there. I don't think I mentioned that last week. I wanted to tell you about that. Excuse me. And let you know about that going on. The Successful Meetings magazine every year comes out with a list of the 10 best restaurants for the previous year. They 5 million reviews of 19,000 restaurants from people who have attended them around the country and around the world and everything. And they're just, it's a compilation of the 10 best restaurants that I voted on by all sorts of people over the months and over the years and over the past year. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because of number one for 2013. Number one was St. Francis Winery and Vineyards in Santa Rosa, California. I mean, you've got places in Miami, Hawaii, Los Angeles, Charleston, South Carolina, Baltimore, Boston, Cincinnati, North Carolina, California, Chicago, but number one, Santa Rosa, St. Francis Winery and Vineyards. And a little blurb here says, St. Francis serves private estate dinners with dishes such as spicy ahi tuna parfait, garlic and thyme roasted sirloin of beef, and seared prosciutto wrapped sea bass. It also offers meeting areas such as a mission style tasting room and an expansive front lawn for groups from 20 to 220. So I caught my eye. A winery, number one in meetings out of over 19,000 restaurants, and a winery came out number one. So yay for them. And another thing I want to pass on to you, too, I received a beverage buyer's guide the other day at the winery, and it just caught my eye, and I thought you might like to know about it. It is it's called BeverageTradeNetwork.com, and what they're doing is brands are seeking distributors and importers for spirits, wines, beers, and non-alcoholic items. The book is full of different items from around the country and around the world, everywhere from moonshine. It listed as moonshine, vodka, liqueurs, all sorts of different liqueurs, vodkas, wines, a whole bunch of different types of wines, and then also beers and sparkling and all that. So I found that just interesting that, you know, if the opening acts send out for distributors and for importers and stuff. And, you know, so go out and get yourself a license. And there's all sorts of things out there that you can start importing and start getting on the market and everything else. Pretty big book. This is 2014 edition. I'm sure they have lots of other besides those available. That's just the newest one out. We talked last week about, wasn't it last week or week before last, about paper wine bottle. We mentioned the paper wine bottle. The winemaker Truett Hirst launches a fully recyclable molded pulp wine bottle to appeal to the eco-conscious people. They have released it. They sold 250,000 bottles in the first 60 days. You have to count some of that as being a novelty item, something unique, something different. But still, 250,000 in 60 days is a big number, no matter what you attribute it to. The CEO says it's an eco-responsible package with an addition to their lines of wine, which they are thrilled to present. The concept was brought to him by Stranger and Stranger out of the United Kingdom. And they said it's a matter of changing the consumer mindset. Campers, hikers, fishermen can carry this lightweight bottle only 1.9 pounds filled and enjoy it almost anywhere. And when it's done, they can collapse it and return it to a recycling site. It is all paper and all recyclable. They have the 2012 Paso Robles Red Blend, $14.99, and the 2012 Mendocino Chardonnay, $13.95. And it is catching on big time. It is getting all sorts of acknowledgement. It says, in total, the carbon footprint for the Paperboy wine bottle, which is all paper, versus glass, is 67% smaller. Wow. So it's just another environmental advantage of the savings in transportation. Paperboy's lower weight versus glass, 85% lighter when empty. According to the normal weight for a case of glass bottles with liquid is 36 pounds. Yep. I ship cases of wine. It is 36 pounds versus the paper, which is comes in at 23.6. A pallet of 56 cases prepared for shipping is reduced from 2,000 pounds to 1,322 pounds. A weight reduction of 34% and a savings of more than 7 tons per truckload when a wine shipped by the truckload. Wow. Big differences, big stuff. And the carbon footprint follows all the way through on shipping costs and recycling and everything else. So the paper bottle, I brought it up a couple of weeks ago, or last week, when we were talking about it, and It's out there. I'm sure you can find it sometime somewhere. It will be on a shelf near you. Something else I noticed, too. Along with environmentally friendly Paperboy wine bottle, paper wine bottle, Truett-Hurst has also conceived another wine bottle design that is helping in packaging and stuff. This is available at Total Wine and More stores across the United States. And it's a square bottle. And it's entitled California Square. Paso Robles, it's fine wine. And it is in a square bottle. Now, you may be familiar with square bottles and whiskeys and different things like that. This is a 750-milliliter bottle. It is actually square-shaped, as opposed to the classic round that we're so used to seeing. It's an alternative package. The wine inside has to over-deliver and create a memorable impression for the consumer. I don't know. I mean, a square bottle is sort of cool. I don't see where the wine would have to create a memorable impression. It says the savings in cardboard and a smaller box allows for an extra layer of boxes on a shipping pallet. 72 versus 56, or 30% more, because you can actually pack them closer together. When you look at a wine box and the round bottles, there is a lot of wasted space in there. So the square bottles is going to give you a tighter packing and therefore smaller boxes, which, you know, actually makes sense. The 2012 vintage of California Square includes a Russian River Chardonnay, a Paso Robles Cabernet, and a Paso Robles Three Red Blend. The wines retail for under $20 a bottle. No specific price, but under $20 a bottle. But that is square bottles. Again, they are available at Total Wines and More, which is all over the country now, I think. I think they're on the West Coast. I'm not sure. I think Total Wines and More is everywhere. But sort of cool. Square bottles, paper bottles. We talked last week, cans, wine in the cans. I'll talk about 12-ounce cans of wine. After we got off the program, I started to think maybe, you know, we can look at a tall boy. If you, you know, you have a party or something, instead of getting the 12-ounce, you get a tall boy. You get yourself a 16-ounce, and you can share it with friends that way. But something else I wanted to share with you here, too, is I picked up a book, back in 2006, I think it was, 2005, 2006, brand new release by Jamie Good, J-A-M-I-G-O-O-D-E, Jamie Good. And it was The Science of Wine. That was the American title of it. I think it's, I'm not sure what the exact title is in Britain, but a different title here in the United States. The Science of Wine, fantastic book. If you are interested in reading a very, very interesting book, and he goes into a lot of great details, but he doesn't really talk too much over your head. He does an excellent job at talking to you and explaining stuff and explaining all sorts of different things. And he talks about organics, and he talks about biodynamics, and he talks about grapes and growing grapes and in the lab, and just a whole complete overview of the wine business, the science of wine, but not in a scientific, major scientific approach. A great book. But I just noticed he has a new release of the same book. The Science of Wine is coming out in 2014. It's going to be released here in the States in April, so we got a couple of months before it hits the shelf. But instead of buying the old one, which I highly recommend, wait till the new one comes out, which will be in a couple of months, and grab that one. Bought mine off of Amazon. No plug for Amazon. It's just a quick, easy way to do it. And I bought mine off Amazon. I'm sure they will be available there. But he has updated it. He's from he said he wrote the first one in 2004. So for the last 10 years, or well, 9 years actually, more realistically, a lot has changed. He has learned more. He is starting to put more things into it and more stuff that he has found out. I am excited about seeing the new book when it comes out. I definitely will pick up a copy. If you are interested in wine, and it's just a very good book. One of the best I think I have ever read to explain everything and not get too much detail, not get too much scientific about it. Some stuff he does. I don't get me wrong. Some of the stuff I just, I don't know if I would be able to understand it if I weren't involved as deeply as I am in it, but I'm sure it's not that above anyone. So pick it up. Jamie Good, J-A-M-I-E, Good, G-O-O-D-E, The Science of Wine, April 2014 release. It is well worth checking that out when it comes out and getting yourself that book. At the beginning, we started to tell you about additives to wines. What do they put in wines? What is added to wines? There's a lot of stuff added to wine. Now, your basic wine is pretty simple. You can ferment. You take yourself a grape and you throw it into a tank, and there actually is enough yeast, wild yeast, on a lot of grapes that it will start fermenting themselves. I have always joked, half kidding, half not, that probably some of the first wines ever made were by cavemen who grabbed some grapes, threw a little indentation of floor in while they were out hunting mastodons or whatever they hunted, and they came back and it had fermented, and you know, it's one of those, ooh, good, and had to do it again because it will ferment itself. I mean, basically, we have cultured yeast, and we have worked with yeast, and we have worked with yeast to the point now where we've got ourselves, you know, specific strains that will do exactly what we want and get results and everything. But, a grape will basically ferment itself, if given the opportunity. But then, so based on that, we have organic vineyards, we have biodynamic vineyards, and if you're not familiar with biodynamic, a good opportunity to check out one of the archived episodes where we talked about a lot. Actually, we talked to a winery in Northern California who does biodynamics, but if you're not familiar with biodynamics, it's a very, it's a major step beyond the organic, which is also a major step beyond regular. But those are growing practices. Those are things that are done in the field. Once you get those grapes into the winery, once you get those into the barn or wherever you're doing it, and you're going to start making this wine, then what are you going to be faced with? Then what are you going to do? And, you know, there's lots of stuff that can be added. There's lots of things that are added to wines to make it better, make it, you know, better colors, better taste, and stuff like that. Let's go through some of this stuff here. I want to talk to you. And one of the reasons I'm bringing this up here, too, and I have to give full disclosure on it, I belong to different blog sites and different things, and I've been corresponding back around with one person, Carmen, wrote, and I can't recall his last name right now, but Carmen wrote on there that we should give full disclosure of our ingredients. We should list full disclosure of what we're putting in wines. And I not really took issue with Carmen, but I asked Carmen. I said, "Does that mean we're going to have a fold-out wine label to list everything that's in there?" Because let's face it, we've heard different guests tell us before that a bottle of red wine has over 350 different trace elements in it, chemicals, different things that they have found in a bottle of red, over 250 in a white. So if we're going to list everything, if we're going to put everything in that's in there, then either a very fine print or a fold-out label, and that's we don't need that. We don't need to do that, I don't think. I think that's going a little bit overboard. Now, maybe some stuff we maybe should put on there. But, things like sulfites. Okay, we all know that there's sulfites in wine because it states it right on the bottle, contains sulfites. But does it contain enough to cause a problem? Is there enough people that's allergic to it that would cause a problem? And if you drink a bottle of wine, you get really, really sick, and you say, maybe I shouldn't drink wine. Of course, you're going to blame it on sulfites because that's what it states on the bottle. But there are so many other things that could be the cause of it. You really can't say it's just sulfites. So stating that, sulfites, sulfur dioxide or sulfites, that protects and preserves the integrity of the wine. Sulfur can stop the fermentation and if needed, kill the microbes and bacteria that can harm a wine's flavor or aroma. So basically, you're going to have it. Yes, all wines do have a little bit of sulfites in it. It's a natural byproduct of fermentation. It's great and it's wonderful that you have a wine that's biodynamic or organic. But if you're going to be shipping that thing all around, all over the place, and it's going to be sitting on the shelves for a while, you might want to bring up that sulfite level there because the aromas might be affected, as might be the bacteria or something like that. So all this great work you're doing in the field might be compromised. I don't know. I just, I'm throwing it out for y'all to think about that. Well, potassium sorbate. Okay, like sulfur, potassium sorbate, and it wards off bad bacteria. That's also used in cheese and yogurt. Read the labels on cheese and yogurt. Potassium sorbate is there also, and it has to be. It really is something that needs to be added so that it will keep out the bad bacteria. In sweet wines, it's often used to prevent further fermentation once in the bottle. And that does happen. I battled that in the past. I believe me, not enough potassium sorbate, and you start noticing it. Something else that's used, tannin powders. Yes, you get tannins from the grapes. You get tannins from the seeds. You get tannins from the barrels, oak barrels. All this will give you tannin, but often to enhance it to enhance the structure of the wine and the astringency for different varietals. Natural tannin sometimes is not, it's lacking, it's deficient. So you want to use a little bit more tannin powder. A vintage could be bad. I mean, with the weather situations we're having around this country, the vintage could really call for more tannin powders. And so the tannin powder is often a mix of grape seeds and skins, oak, chestnut, and nut gall, which are small nut-like swellings on tree branch barks. You may have seen the little bumps on there. Oh, that's nut galls. It's just a mixture of stuff. And it's actually organic, if you will. It's not any chemicals, but it is then added into the wine to give it a little bit of structure, you know, enhances the structure. Water. Yeah, water is used where it's allowed by law. There's some states that don't allow you to put water back into it, but when the water is lost through dehydration or to lower the sugar or alcohol levels, water is added. It lowers the sugar and alcohol levels simply because you're diluting it, if you will. That's all it is. Enzymes. Certain enzymes help cull compounds from the skin and help clear out any impure microscopic crud that's left over after fermentation. After fermentation, you have a lot of stuff that float to the top. You scrape it off, or it, you know, sinks to the bottom. You rack off the top. Enzymes will help clarify that stuff. We'll make it better looking, if you will. Plus, filtering does that too. Sugars. Now, this is something people are always asking at the winery. Do you add sugars? No, actually, we don't. When faced with underripe grapes, a lot of winemakers can add sugar to increase alcohol levels. Science 101, when you ferment sugar, what happens? It turns to alcohol. That's just, you know, that's your basics there. So if you only have a small amount of sugar in there, you ferment all that sugar out, and you end up with your 6-7% alcohol level, and you want to bring that up higher, you add the sugar so it ferments that out also. Sugar also can be added before bottling to improve mouthfeel and lower the astringency of wines. And again, not much, and it's not just your, you know, you don't go down and buy a bag of cane sugar that's, you know, granulated cane sugar. There's all sorts of other types of sugars that are added. There's fructose, and there's sucrose, and there's sugars from all sorts of different fruits and stuff that are granulated and that can be used. So it's not just all straight cane sugar. A lot of regions allow the practice, which is called chapelization, by the way. In California, sugar can't be added to any still wine. They can only time it can be, it's allowed in California is during dosage phase of a sparkling wine, and that's just before it's corked so that it gives the bubbles, if you will, gives the second fermentation. Mega Purple. This is known by lots of names. I was using, what was it? I asked my engineer if she remembers. What was that we were using coloring that purple? No, before that. I don't remember either. We were using a reddish color that was very strong. A small amount would, yeah, I mean, it would turn, you know, anything into a darker, deep darker color. We're now using another thing that's not nearly as bad and not nearly as expensive, and it works just as well. It's a wine grape juice concentrate, basically, red wine concentrate. It concentrates all those colors down into a smaller container so you can add it to it, and it gives you better color. And, you know, it's used more often than people would care to admit, and it doesn't hurt. And again, it's quite organic. It helps boost the color and sometimes the sugar level without technically adding sugar, you can say. So, you know, hello, California. This is sometimes how they can get around it. It's lots of names. There's a whole list of different types of coloring out there. I can't think of the one that was using. Purple 8000 is a very popular one. It's a very good coloring, and all of them are organic and everything. Oak chips or staves or powders or chunks or any of that stuff is something else. Instead of using oak barrels, which oak barrels can get very expensive, anywhere from, I need to get an oak barrel person on the program too. I just, every time I think about that, I never follow up. But oak barrels range anywhere from $500 to $2,000, depending on where you're getting them, how much you're paying for them, who's making them, how far you're shipping them. It can get ridiculous. It can get very expensive on oak barrels. And so these cheaper than barrels provide for an increased surface contact with the wine. It just gives you consistency. It's a lot easier, a lot faster. You can choose from American or French oak. You can pick flavors. You can pick if you want vanilla or coconut or leather or smoke or spice or, licorice or whatever you want. There's all sorts of different ones out there. You can have heavy smoked, light smoked, heavy toasted, light toast. Excuse me. Any number of ways you can get oak on there. And that's something that's added, and then it's cleaned off and pumped off of that. Acids, too. Here's something that acids is critical in the wine that affects the microbes and particle stability, color, aging potential, all this stuff. Acids are pretty – and wines have to have acid. People come in all the time, oh, this is bitter. I said, I think you're tasting the acid in there. If bitterness in wine is not a good trait. It may be going bad, but people just immediately interpret the acid as bitter, and it's not. It's the acid can be interpreted lots of different ways. So, tartaric acid is prevalent in wine grapes and is the most common addition. Tartaric acid is all the time. I had a lot of wineries add a little bit of it. Malic and lactic acids are also naturally occurring and are often blended with tartaric into low acid wines to bring up that little bit of acid, a little bit higher acid. Citric acid can also be added for to give a lift of whiteness, the brightness of a white wine. It makes it sparkle. I've heard winemakers say they like to add it because it makes it sparkle. It does. Too much of it you don't want, but yeah. And then yeast, that's also added. But there's all sorts of grape juice, converting it. What yeast does is it gobbles up the sugars and makes alcohol. It's also different types of yeast will affect the aromas. The different types will make the mouthfeel different. It'll affect the flavors. All these different things are attributed to yeast. There's 6 yeasts that are used quite often around the country, 6 or maybe 7, but that's about it. There's others. Excuse me. There's others, but not 6 or 7 main ones that you hear about. And then fining agents. As you're fermenting grapes and aging wine, there is stuff that actually suspended particles that float around the wine. It occurs. You really can't get away from it. These particles cause cloudiness and sediment. If you look at some wines, you'll see a sediment. Wine diamonds, which is the tartaric acid that's actually settled in bottles, won't hurt you. You'll find it in some wines. You'll see a little layer of dirt, it looks like, on a bottle that's been laying down on a shelf or something, and that could be from the sediments and stuff that weren't filtered out. But you can add fining agents that catch a hold of these particles and stuff, and it cleans them out. Like sponges, if you will. They're not sponges, don't get me wrong, but they work like a sponge on the particles on there. Different types of fining agents, though, and this, before I get into it, is one of the reasons why the government, every once in a while, keeps coming up, different people keep coming up saying, we need to put on the bottles of wine that they contain allergens. And it's ridiculous. And, you know, if you start putting that on bottles of wine, everybody's going to be allergic to wine because they really don't know what they're talking about. The government is thankfully wiser heads prevail and stop it from happening. But some people are allergic to some of these fining agents, and because they are allergic to some of these fining agents, then the government thinks we should label wines that they contain allergens. One of the things used is fish bladders, known as isinglass. This is a pure form of protein that can be used to pull out the bitter tannins, and it binds with haze-inducing particles, and it cleans up the wine very well. And some people, yes, are allergic to fish. Mammal proteins is another very popular one. This is probably more so than isinglass. This is egg whites or gelatins, especially effective for clarifying red wines. Some wineries, and this is where the government thinks that they should protect us, is they take stainless steel tanks, put oak dust, oak particles and oak things into the wine and let the oak float around into the stainless steel. And then to clarify this, to clean it out, they'll drop egg whites on top. These egg whites are heavier than the wine, thicker than the dust, and as it floats down to the bottom, it pulls all this dust and these particles to the bottom of the tank. You rack off the top of it, you've got your wine, it's clear and it's clarified and everything else, and you're not doing major filtering to get that stuff out of there, and it keeps the integrity of the wine. Well, some people are allergic to eggs, and so the government says, hey, we should put that on a bottle, contains allergens. If you're listening, government, don't ever do that. That's ridiculous. Another thing, casein, a milk protein, is used to clarify wines, especially white and rosés. Bentonite clay, it's good for absorbing, but it also helps reduce astringency. And it's mined in Wyoming, the one state we haven't talked to yet. Bentonite packs the most sponge power of all clays. And don't be scared of that. It's a common ingredient in toothpaste. So as you're scrubbing your teeth tonight or tomorrow morning, you actually could be using bentonite clay on it. And plastic. There's all sorts of plastics out there that can be used. It eliminates ugly colors, helps stabilize the wines. PVPP is the one most common used. It's you know, referred to as the workhorse of plastics. Polyvinyl pyrrolidone rather, is PVPP. So, and then yeast nutrients can be used that the wine starts to not ferment if the fermentation slows down or something. Throw in some yeast nutrients, and then acid reducers also to keep the wine from being too acidic. Some of the things there, let me go another even more here and tell you some more about the additives. Antioxidant preservatives. These serve to minimize the effects of oxygen on wine. They're also retard, but will not by themselves prevent fermentation from starting up if the sugar remains. Most of the time, you'll find potassium metabisulfite and sodium bisulfite powders and Camden pills or Camden tablets. Usually, the Camden tablets are sodium, but not potassium, just sodium. The sulfur dioxide, the most versatile. This is SO2. This is the most versatile. I talked a little bit about that, but let me talk a little bit. It comes as close to anything to being recommended for all wines, SO2. It inhibits molds and inhibits bacteria and yeast cells, but with the yeast cells, it's selective. Most of the more desirable strains for wine fermentation are more tolerant of sulfites than other strains. So, you know, it's SO2 is just really something that, you know, you don't have in your wine, and it takes a little bit more work and stuff like that to get get your nice balance. SO2 is used for cleaning, all sorts of different stuff. It's a great all around chemical. The potassium metabisulfite also, it's a little bit a weaker form of the sulfur dioxide, or SO2, used just as well and just as much, but it's not quite as potent, and it doesn't burn as much when you smell it and stuff. Potassium sorbate is a yeast inhibitor used to prevent further fermentation in wines with residual sugar. It doesn't kill yeast, but prevents them from dividing to produce new yeast cells. And it does not inhibit the growth of malolactic bacteria. Malolactic, the butteriness you get in your Chardonnays, that's a malolactic fermentation there. So potassium sorbate doesn't stop that. If malolactic fermentation takes place after the addition of sorbate, a distinct off odor of geranium leaves will be produced. This can be cured by adding sulfur dioxide and working with air. But these are things that wineries do. Ascorbic acid, or vitamin C, is an antioxidant which is used as a partial substitute for sulfur dioxide. The results are inconsistent, but it's another way to do it. Wines low in acid may taste flabby, while high in acid may be uncomfortably sharp. Bitter, some people refer. pH is a measure of the portion of the acid which are in ionic form and which will conduct an electric current. pH doesn't follow very close to the sense of taste of a wine because only about 1% of the organic acids found in wine are in ionic form. So it's not something that you really have to worry about. Tartaric acid, characteristic acid of grapes, which is found in no other common fruit. Tartaric acid. Low acid grapes with warmer climates will benefit from the addition of tartaric acid. Yes, I use tartaric acid. The wine will clear more readily and will keep and taste better. And it buffers the pH. Citric acid is found in small amounts in grapes and larger amounts in many other fruits, and it can be metabolized during fermentation, so usually very little remains at the end of fermentation. But best practice to add it after the end of fermentation. As an acidic, it has the advantage of not upsetting tartrate stability. Malic acid is found almost universally in temperate fruits. It dominates in apples, and together with tartaric acid accounts for most of the acid in grapes. And then there's acid blends. Phosphoric acid is used to lower the pH in wines. Calcium carbonate is used to reduce the ability of wine or must. It reacts preferentially with tartaric acid over malic acid, so the best practice involves adding to a fraction of the wine and recombining it later. Potassium bicarbonate, used to reduce the acidity of must in wines. Avoid using this if the pH is above 3.5. Potassium bitartrate, or cream of tartar, used as a seeding agent to promote cold stabilization. And then there are other types of yeast, all sorts of different yeast that you can use. Like I say, there's six or seven basic yeast here. There's others that are available. Fining agents, there's all sorts of different fining agents. I read you some of them a little bit earlier and told you about them. Bentonite powder is a fine sodium bentonite with superior absorption. That's the one I just read you about. Sparkaloid powder, it's a hop mix you can get. Again, fish guts, swim bladders. icing glass. And there's gelatin powders, potassium castanate powder, which is also used as clarification powder, silica gel, and PVPPT, and different things, all the different ones that I just told you about, egg whites. And then there's enzymes you can add to your wine, tannin products and color enhancers, testing regions. There's, you know, all this stuff can be added to wines. They're not going to hurt you. They're not going to cause any problems. They're not going to be anything that you have to worry about. It's just things that are added to enhance the wines, to help the flavors of the wines, to help the wines taste better, to help the wines survive their life on the shelf before you get around to drinking them and all that. Organic is great. And organic is wonderful. And I have a lot of respect for people who grow organic. It's a lot of work and it's a lot of stuff that you're doing. And it's a lot of effort. But once it leaves that field, biodynamic, even more work, even more chances of having a problem with losing your grapes and stuff. But once it leaves that field, if you're going to have problems with them, if it's not clarified, if it's not, the yeast isn't working right, if all these things start happening, you're not going to stop using all that stuff just to continue on from your organic or biodynamic so you can say this is all that way. You're not going to lose your crop in the winery. You're not going to lose what you've done just because you're not going to add some of this stuff. And most of this stuff is organic anyway. Most of the stuff, it's not chemicals. Most of this stuff is actually very, very pure, clean stuff. So, and it's not going to hurt you. It's not going to cause a problem. It's not going to make any difference in your wine. Your wines will still taste good and everything. And, I think if we have to start listing all this stuff on a bottle of wine, then not knowing what this stuff is will scare people. The fear of the unknown. And it really comes out when you start listening. That's the same thing with sulfites. People don't really know what sulfites are, how they affect the wines, what they are used for. All they know is that it states on the bottle, contains sulfites. And so people become fearful of sulfites. I don't know how often I have people come in and say, well, I can't drink wine, I'm allergic to sulfites. And I said, no, you're not. It could be any number of other reasons why you're getting a reaction to wine. Most often it's because you're drinking too much wine and you're getting alcohol. But if we have to start putting all this stuff on bottles of wine, I think it's just going to create so many problems that, God bless you, Carmen, but I don't think it would work. Even if places do it voluntarily, people are going to question, what's this, and you don't have a explanation sheet that comes with every bottle of wine. So that's what goes in wine.
Wow. I was going to ask you until that last statement where you said most of those items are organic and it's not chemical. I was going to ask you, a person just getting started in this industry, and we've talked to a few of them, it almost sounded like by that list, 250 just in white wine, it's like they have to have a complete chemistry lab just to get started. But,
a lot of these now, a lot of these different chemicals and stuff that you find are trace stuff that is actually from fermentation. Okay. If you take a glass of white wine and you take it to the lab and you say, here, tell me everything you can find in this, you're going to get yourself a list of over 200, 300 different chemicals, a trace. I mean, mm-hmm. trace amounts, parts per million, parts per trillion, stuff like that. Yes, you do. You really have to. Blending and chemistry and stuff like that going on. I mean, a lot of math and everything. When I started to make wine, I had to learn a lot of these different formulas and stuff to be sure I was putting the right amounts in and, you know, you don't want to put too much in, but yet you want enough in there that's going to serve its purpose. And so, you know, it really is an art. I'm not bragging. I'm just, you know, the people who do wines, and when you sit down and you open yourself up a bottle of wine, you taste that and you go, wow, this is really good. You really have to think back to the winemaker saying, you know, that he did a great job of putting all this stuff together to get this good right here in my glass.
So they're actually, with measuring spoons, or I don't know what the measuring, you know, would be on this, but they're actually having to measure out. I mean, there's probably a list of formulas out there that they have to follow, that you have to follow every time you make a certain bottle of wine with all these different things in it. I mean, it happens naturally, but, you know, to get it right, you have to. Wow.
If you're using them, yes. If you're using them, there's certain, like sulfites. Sulfites has a formula. Certain parts per million, you want to bring that up. And by law in the United States, since we're talking about sulfites, by law in the United States, you can't bring the sulfites above 350 parts per million, I believe, is a maximum. Nobody brings it up that high. So you have a formula to get you to where you want to go. If you're adding anything else, you have your formulas of what you're doing. And, you know, everything's metric. I mean, I don't know anything in wine that isn't metric. Most everything we go metric because it's so much easier. About the only time we use gallons is when we convert it over for the federal government so we can pay our taxes. But just about everything we do is metric because it's just easier. It's a base 10, and it's just so much easier to measure stuff and all that. So we're adding, you know, 100 milliliters of this to the tank, or we're adding 2 milliliters per gallon, and we got this many gallons in there, and so, you know, and everything's metric, and so we measure out, we know how much we're going to put in there, and we measure it out and all that, and it gets our results, and we don't just walk up to a tank and say, okay, we need to add 500 milliliters of this, or, you know, 20 grams of this or something, and just dump it in there. Well, pull out a gallon and take that gallon and experiment with that. Pull out a gallon out of the tank and sit down and say, okay, we taste it and we test it and we say, okay, this needs more of this or more of that. How much do we need? And we start adding it to the gallon and we get our results with the gallon. And then we say, okay, we added, you know, 3 grams per gallon. So therefore we've got a 500 gallon tank here, so 3 grams per gallon times 500. We need to add this much to this tank to get the same results, so we have what we want in it.
Wow!
And so that's.
I didn't realize all that went into creating, you know, the wine. I figured it was grapes, yeast, and, you know, luck, time. But you start mentioning all this, I'm like, wow, you really have to, you know, and we're talking to all these new wineries that come up and getting into it, and, you know, I guess they've already gone through that part, or you know, I don't know. It's just amazing how much goes into it. You know,
there is, you know,
never thought about
There's all sorts of different things you go on. These are different additives, and some wines don't need them. Some wines don't need the additives. Mm-hmm. I mean, you sit there, but, you know, little things can make a little bit of difference. You know, and it's nice to know that you can add a little bit of this, or a little bit of that, and you're not going to lose your wine. I mean, you're not going to lose your crop. You're not going to lose what you've done so far. I mean, if you take a wine and say, okay, I'm not going to do anything to this, I'm just going to make the wine straight out and all that, and then all of a sudden you find that you're starting to get a second fermentation, say your malolactic fermentation is starting in that, what are you going to do? Well, you know, you don't want to make a bubbly out of it. You want to control that. So you're going to get yourself a chemical, and you're going to find out how much you need per gallon, and you're going to stop that. And it's not going to hurt anything, and it's not going to, you know, change the wine, but it's going to save your wine, actually. I mean, after it's gotten to the point there where you're ready to bottle it and you have a problem, you're not going to say, well, okay, well, I'm not going to add any chemical to this because I am going to be pure and not add any chemical, so therefore I have to throw this down the drain. Yeah, right. That's not going to happen. And so You'll add your chemical. And that's why I say it's great and it's wonderful, organic, biodynamic, but once it gets to that final step before you're going to bottle it, if you want a little bit more coloring to it, then add your purple 8000 or whatever it is you happen to use to get that little bit more color. And that purple 8000 is from grape skins and stuff, and it's all there, but you're putting something else into it to get the color you want. And things like this. And it's completely legal, and it doesn't hurt anything, but mm-hmm. it's things that enhances and too much of it could be detrimental to the taste. Not enough of it, why even add it? So, yes, it is.
Have these ingredients been around for a long time? For a long time, or what was that oldest cellar? How old were those bottles? They were like, I keep thinking 40,000. I don't know why 40,000 years, but the oldest cellar that was in the news a few months ago. But they found all these old, crushed bottles.
I remember that.
They said were wines. They were like 4,000 years old or something.
They didn't have all this
in there. Some of the ones that were created naturally. But, is this something that's progressing more and more as, there's more experimentation going on? Well, maybe if I add this, it will help with this. I know there's... We've talked to universities out there that are probably doing things like that. But, Is all this recent, or
it's progressing?
It's been around for a while.
It's progressing. You think, was this going to work? And you try it. Who was the first person to pull a cow udder and find out that milk comes out? Who would think of doing that?
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing. You experiment a little bit with this, you experiment a little bit with that, and you go, oh wow, look, this really does work. This does enhance this does make it better. And I'm sure there has been lots and lots of experiments that were complete flops because it didn't work. But it's an ongoing constant thing. And once they find some, then it's out there. People, pass it on. And we've discovered during this program that people don't mind sharing, I've tried this. If you tried it, this works well and stuff. And so, some of this stuff I'm sure has been around for a long, long time. Some of this not nearly. They've been using oak barrels for a long time. And I'm sure that since they, don't always have access to oak barrels, I'm sure that they've chopped up some pieces of oak and thrown it in there and seen how the results are on that and different things. And so... And it's experimenting just like anything. So,
yeah. Okay. Wow. And then I was going to ask something about the paper wine bottles. Have you actually seen the paper wine bottles yet?
I haven't. No, I wish I could.
Yeah,
I'd love to see one.
I'm wondering if the filling process would be different. You'd have to buy a whole new, bottle fillering type of thing. Is it more cost effective for the wineries to have, to go to maybe than glass?
It
I don't
looks
know.
Like the pictures I see of it, it looks like it's just looks like a brown bottle, not even thinking that it might be paper. It just looks like a brown bottle. I think the filling process is probably the same. It's a molded paper outer shell in the shape of a traditional wine bottle with a plastic liner inside. So it's got a little thing here. How to serve this Paso Robles wine is made from the region's finest grapes, grown in a variety of elevations and unique microclimates. How to save the planet with the paper bottle? One, separate bottle at seams, remove plastic bladder. So it shows that. Two, recycle. And so that's basically it. So, after you're done, you can pop it apart at the seams, remove the bladder, and recycle the paper on the outside because it's all just like newsprint type paper.
Oh, wow.
So,
interesting.
And then the bladder inside is tall. So, it's like a regular bottle, and it's a bladder, a plastic bladder lining on the inside.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Look into that. See what it is.
Yeah,
how is it shipped in what form to the wineries? I mean, is it possible that it's collapsed? So because you're not having to keep the glass, you know, roundness of the glass. Do the paper bottles, when they're shipped to the wineries, are they flattened and then you fill them that way, or are they already like wine bottles, like you said, that appears in the picture?
That's a good question. I don't know. It doesn't say.
You could fit quite a few of those in a case or something. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe I can get a... Okay, yeah. Stranger. Green bottle, UK-based green bottle at www.greenbottle.com. That's where it's supplied by. So might have something there. www.greenbottle.com. So that might have something listed there. But no, I don't know.
Alrighty. Well,
yeah. Just in 750 sizes all so far.
Huh.
But it's pretty surprising. I mean, it's only $14, $15, you know, stuff like that. That's, you know, not real expensive. That's the price you're paying for most any of them anyway. So, interesting. That square bottle. I'm going to have to make a trip to Total Wines and check out that square bottle.
The
square bottle. Reminds me of wild turkey. Wild turkey with honey comes in square bottles, and that's what it reminds me of.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So let's see. What do we have now? No major events going on. We mentioned that before, earlier. I think before the show we were talking about that. Didn't find anything, okay. Well, good. So next Thursday, April the 6th, I believe it is, we will talk about
March,
the Wine Fest and everything that you have going on. Yeah. March, what did I say? April?
You said April.
You know, I wrote
skip
down.
March. Yeah.
I wrote down April on my sheet. Okay. March 6th. There we go.
March.
I'm thinking a month. I wrote it down
whole,
in my notes.
A whole month. You skipped that.
That's right. We'll see you all in April. No. March.
And people are always saying time flies. Twice.
Yep. Okay. So I guess we can go ahead and 8:07. Yeah, we'll go ahead and close down the show for this evening, I guess, unless you have any last minute things. Nobody's on the phone lines, so we'll go ahead and close it down here, and we'll see everybody next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio or AFRN. So thank you for tuning in, and y'all have a great week. And don't forget to, open up a bottle and drink some more wine. That's always good.
There you go.
Where's it at? This one's...
Thank y'all for tuning in. There you go.
Thanks a lot. Yep. Had to play that. Where is my exit thing here? I moved this around? No. Oh, there it is. All right. We'll see y'all next week. Wow.
See y'all next week. Thanks.
Yep.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of US 19 and US 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com. or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. Or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Follow the Armed Forces Radio Network on Twitter at the AFRN and on Facebook at facebook.com/Armed Forces Radio. Thank you for listening to this show. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.